Was Morgan Firestar, No Strings Attached, from an album of the same name. Hard to find, very rare. And she's a great singer, been dead now for about 9 years. She was a great anti-psychiatry worker who worked with victims of the psychiatric movement. You're tuned to Free Radio. I'm Robert Norris. This is 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. It's around 6:03 by the studio clock. My watch is always way off one way or the other. And we're going to go for 2 hours now doing a show I traditionally do. This is the short show. The long show is on Sunday between 9:30 and 1. In case you get Jones in for a show at some other time, you can jump on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, H-U-F-F, website at huffsantacruz.org and catch the old shows. The last two shows have not been archived yet. I'm hoping that I'll be taken care of soon. And you can listen to past shows if you'd like. I apologize for not being much description of those shows. But, hey, Think of the thrill. You can go to mystery shows and listen to them. You can also call in at 427-3772. That's the call-in number of this station if you want to talk on the air, and that's a lot of what I hope happens here. We get people talking about local community issues, taking issue with me or agreeing with me or adding and supplementing information that perhaps I should have but don't. There's also a chat room you can go to, pagesincolor.com, which I'm actually doing right now. It's in case you can't get in on the phone line at 427-3772, and you can jump on the chat room, pagesincolor.com. I'm there. Nobody else is at the moment. But I'll keep, I hope, an eye on that. I'm sometimes a little bit delinquent in that, but I'm going to try to be a more circumspect and cautious and methodical watcher today. So, I'm going to jump to some tapes, and I may have a guest coming in shortly. Who knows, maybe a little musical, live music perhaps, depending on the which guest shows up when. It's always kind of a crapshoot with me, but hopefully the crap can be well shot. In any case, we haven't got a lot of crap here. We got some good stuff. And if we haven't got that, perhaps you can call in and contribute some thoughts of your own. Here's a little bit from the streets.
Night. This is a little red table, which you've set up here for the International Food Festival. What's this all about?
The International Food Festival is to help to support Hurricane Katrina, and a portion of the proceeds will go to be sent through IOCC, which is International Orthodox Christian Charities, and the obviously we know what that's for. We will be having international foods from all over the world. And yes, 92% of IOCC's donations go directly to Hurricane.
So you're not skimming off stuff off of the top here, is what you're saying.
No, we're
not. You're not going to do a Red Cross on us?
No.
Red Cross takes 25-30% of the donations for administration fees, where the IOCC, International Orthodox Christian Charities, only takes 8%.
Now, your name is?
My name is Michael.
And you are?
I'm Barbara.
And you guys have been here how long, and what kind of a reception have you got?
A wonderful. Well, listen to them. They're incredible. They're highly trained professionals, and they had a couple days because they came in through Houston, and Houston got canceled, so they came here 2 days early. So we're filling the time down here at the Santa Cruz Garden Mall.
Wow. And the name of this group?
The name of the group is the Credo Quartet, which means I believe. Stems from Latin.
You better get a little of this on tape.
No, I cannot.
What's going on here? You don't know Latin, or is it Greek?
It's Russian.
It's Russian? Wow.
A little shy of my Russian translation.
You better bone up.
If it was Spanish, I could do that.
So, how successful have you been tonight in terms of getting donations?
Over 2 hours, maybe $50, $60 tops.
We are going to be broadcasting 101.1. And again, for folks who want to contribute more or hear more of this fine group, how can they do that?
You can come to St. Peter and Paul's Orthodox Church in Ben Lomond on Sunday at 7 p.m. They'll be in concert, live, free concert. The group travels from place to place accepting donations to get them to the next town and the next venue.
Wow. Where is that church?
That's off of Highway 9, 9980 Highway 9 in Ben Lomond.
And this is a free event, or it costs money?
It's a free event. It's an international food festival. Starts at 1 p.m., and that'll go until 8:30 after the concert ends. and that there's food, festivities, climbing walls, sumo suits, games for kids, silent auction from 1 to 5, dunk tank, and a lot of the proceeds will be going, again, to Hurricane Katrina and Rita relief efforts.
Also, Reebok is sponsoring a local athlete who is now playing for Atlantic Falcons, and that is Jordan Beck, and his paraphernalia will be all there. The whole team is signing, so...
Drug paraphernalia, though.
And so, you threw me there.
Gotcha. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Jan.
And how many places have you been singing at now since you left Russia?
We just sing in California or in Texas. So it's probably so strange, but it is so. But now it's our first try be here and on the street.
Is this your first time on the street?
Yeah, it's first time.
Please do it on more streets. We can use your sound.
Oh yeah, sure.
And again, your name is?
Okay.
Okay. Robert Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's about 10 o'clock outside Borders. And I must be
from a couple weeks ago, the International Food Shindig with the international singers apparently has gone the way of, well, wherever they went. These tapes are rather old, at least a week or two old. In the studio with me, however, I have Duck and Rat. Rat, street poet. Duck, street guy. He's just watching. He's going to give us some commentary on what's been going on. Hey, Duck, what's happening?
Not too much, man. Just chilling.
And Rat, what's the word with you?
Berkeley gutter punk, just in town, squatting and enjoying the beautiful people in Santa Cruz.
So, how long you been in town, the two of you?
I've been in town for about 5 days. I'm kind of squatting out here, and I just got in from L.A. I was squatting down in Mexico for a little bit and getting a lot of free booze and drinking on a beach and decided to take a break. So I came up north, and here I am.
So did you – actually, we have a third party in the studio. What's your name?
Sierra. What's up?
Hey, Sierra. Are you also from local, out of town?
No. I'm from San Francisco. I just moved down here because I got into UCSC, but I'm a homeless cat, too. And we just actually got hooked up with housing from financial aid. But I'm still on the streets, but still going to school, so...
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you take?
Well, right now I'm a junior transfer. I'm interested in psychology, but mostly in, like, children in extremely dangerous environments and trying to help, like, that. And
of
also,
which you were one at one time, or not?
Unfortunately, yeah, but not like it is in the world. In the United States, we got it, like, you know, living really good. You know, it's really cush. So I can't really complain, but I know that if I was in another part of the world, I'd probably be sleeping on a vent in the snow or some crazy shit like that, so I can't really complain. But and I got an opportunity to education, so it's good.
And are you? Are there many UCSC students who are homeless like yourself?
I don't believe so. I haven't really met too many people because homeless, I kind of feel like I get looked down on. There's a lot of yuppies there. But I hope if there are that I'll meet them, you know what I mean, and it'll be cool. So I hope so.
As a woman... How are you being treated? I see you're being fondled well at the moment, but are you...
Oh, yeah, this is my live-in homeless boyfriend. We've been together on the streets before we got together for about 3.5 years.
And generally, what's your story? Are you able to defend yourself? Do you have to defend yourself?
Well, you know, I'm pretty tall. I'm about 5'9", which is model height, and, you know...
Sierra whoops ass.
Basically, yeah, you know, I've dealt with a lot of bullshit, so, you know, I've had to learn real quick on the streets, so, yeah.
How long you been out on the streets?
Well, I live with him, you know, like, literally outside for about 2 years. I've been, you know, off and on to motels with my family and, you know, back and forth, different places wherever we could get, but... probably at least about 4 years now, off and on.
Has it changed you much?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I don't believe in the whole capitalist system, and I don't believe that if you, you know, go to work, you can actually make it, because I've become, you know, aware of a lot of circumstances that don't allow you to, you know, elevate if you'd like to.
Any comments from either of the two men in the studio? Since we want to give equal time to the other gender.
Yeah, I'm just curious why I'm classified as a terrorist for believing what I believe. I don't
Patriot
use,
Act 2001.
I don't use the word bomb, terrorists, or kill Bush or anything like that. I would never do that because I'm an American boy. But you know what?
American boy with blue hair, I might add. Now, what's that all about, Mr. Blue Guy?
Some really pretty girl at Saturn Cafe attacked me with some hair dye, and I just had a crush on her, and I was drunk, and she sprayed it on my head, and, you know, what can you do?
Did the two of you, should we say, make it together in a meaningful way?
I'm a single man with a very strong libido.
I see. I don't know whether that's an answer or not.
He doesn't kiss and tell.
I see. And to use a gentle way of putting it. What's it like on the streets of Santa Cruz? Are all three of you, we have a fourth person in the studio, too, who is often outside. You want to come over and introduce
yourself? Yeah, Nemo, get over here.
So Nemo, what's your story? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I just came down here from Sacramento like a week ago, and I'm living on the streets, too, with these guys.
How is it?
It's good.
Rough. You say it's good or it's rough? Which is it?
Both. A little of both.
And you guys, are you guys in a camp together? Do you sleep separately? Are you in different
separately.
Spots?
Separately.
Okay. And is there much solidarity on the streets? We've heard about, I've seen and gotten instances of some police crackdown on the streets. Do people sort of disperse in all different directions? Or is there people stand up for each other? Is it mixed? What's the deal?
We just, like, sit there unless, like, we got warrants. So, like, we stand up for each other, yeah.
What do you say about that?
Well, just actually in the last couple of days, there have been some instances that we haven't even been aware of. But when we find out that our homies are getting messed with, we got to, like, you know, roll out there with them and make sure that they know that they have family out there, because a lot of us don't have, like, you know, the Brady Bunch family, at least. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rat or Duck.
Man, my homie, man, he's Jeremy, man. He don't do nothing to nobody, man, but they constantly give him tickets for nothing just to send him to jail, because they'd rather have the homeless in jail than have the homeless on the streets, and they look down on us so much that the cops even look down on us, where to the point where they're like, even the community service cops are like, you know,
laughing at us.
Yeah, they're just drunk, you know, youngsters that don't deserve any help whatsoever.
That's what they think about you.
Yeah, that's what I can see, the total attitude. And, you know, it sounds like I'm just being, you know, like, you know, negatory towards the cops. But I have family that are cops. So I have a whole grasp of both sides.
What kind of where are your family police?
Well, my family, they're from Pennsylvania, and they my uncle trains cops, like, you know, the self-defense that they learn.
Are you close to your uncle?
Yeah, I call him every month. When we were down there, we used to go over there every weekend, and from New Jersey to Pennsylvania to hang out with him. You know, it's a pretty far way.
And how old are you?
I'm 24 now, mm-hmm. And when we were down there, I was like 13 or 14, and we would go down there and, you know, he would teach me things about the cops that nobody else would teach me, you know, and pretty much he let me know that cops are trained to see you as lower than them. You see what I'm saying?
How would you compare the Pennsylvania police with the Santa Cruz police?
The police is pretty much the same all over. They got a biased view. You're guilty, above all. Yeah. No, it's not even till proven innocent, because they run their whole lives on the fact that you're guilty. You see what I'm saying? Their whole lives are built around this judicial system that says you're guilty until proven innocent. And, you know, it started out as innocent until proven guilty, but I don't believe it started out that way either.
No,
so.
And again, your name is?
It's Sierra.
Sorry, Sierra.
Yeah, no worries.
Hey, Sierra. I got an idea for you. Why don't you tell the story about that redhead who was talking shit to our friends? Oh, sorry, I can't say that on radio.
Well, actually, in Free Radio Santa Cruz, you better watch your fucking mouth, okay?
All right!
Yes, go ahead. Sierra, do you want to tell that story?
Oh, you mean the gentleman that we had to deal with the other day?
No. Tell him how No.
Whatever feels good, you guys, if you're comfortable.
Okay, well, basically, one of these gentlemen thought that it was okay to harass one of my homies. I can't say that it's, you know, proper to indulge in alcoholic behaviors, but, you know, if it's cold outside, then you're more likely to drink just to get through the night. And, you know, my homie had a little incident, and he was kind of joking about it with my friend over here who's just speaking, who asked me to tell the story.
Rat.
And they, you know, they really started getting on him, and once, you know, my friend over here left, they really started to get on him, and he ended up, you know, coming in confrontation with a few of them, and there's about four of them and just him himself.
But then Rat came back.
Yeah. And, you know, the next day we found one of them, and, you know, of course he's like, I don't know any of you guys. I didn't say anything like that, which really he did.
Now, we're not talking about police. We're talking about private citizens.
Exactly. Yeah. The people who believe that, oh, you know, you're just homeless because you do. And most people tell me to get a job or go to school. And when I tell them that I go to both, that they can't even.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm actually a caretaker for the disabled.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, actually, a lady who is the godmother of my niece and nephew-in-law, of this gentleman right over here, Duck, you know, she went to the same community college as me, and we both moved down here. She came a year before me, and she asked me because she knew, you know, I was a compassionate person, and so I do that, and I go to school. And, you know, most people tell me, oh, you know, go to school or get a job, and I've actually come into confrontation with a couple of people because they make those assumptions that the homeless aren't trying to do something, which really it is that you don't have an address, you don't have a telephone number, you don't have a place to take a shower to be able to get a job in the system, you know what I mean?
Okay, I'm going to cover some of the sensationalist aspects. Would you guys call yourselves in any way alcoholics?
Hell yeah.
Rat says hell yeah. What do you say, Sierra?
Yeah,
I say
yeah.
That it, like I said earlier, it's easier to be able to be slightly intoxicated to deal with the cold weather and to be able to go to sleep dealing with the aspects that you've dealt with society. Yeah. Yeah, I get people who tell me that I'm doing nothing in my life and I'm really doing an exceptional amount considering my background. And it is easier to go to sleep slightly intoxicated, but I say that, you know, people buy a 40 and share it amongst five people and nobody even really gets a buzz. It's just a community kind of, you know, sharing of the beverages, in my opinion.
And that goes across the board. We're sharing everything. If we get spare food, we get spare change. It's like, it's
spare
community.
Everybody, yeah.
Especially even
of
the ATM.
Yeah. Well, it's just the point of it's a community, exactly that, and communities share what they share, you know, whatever a community gets, they share amongst themselves because it's one people for all. It's not just one-on-one, you know, it's not just one person gets something and then that's that one person's. No, we believe that if you get something, everybody else is starving right next to you. Everybody else is wanting that drink right next to you. Everybody else is wanting that cigarette right next to you. So it's just the point of if everybody wants some because everybody's got nothing, then there's no point in just keeping it to yourself.
Do a lot of squatting. Is there, like, do you have indoor places where you can go when it gets cold and wet, as it's going to be doing?
Not really.
Well, when I've been homeless since I was 15 and a half, and I've never once slept. I mean, I've slept inside from people's houses, but when it comes to being homeless and people not caring, you sleep outside. It don't matter where you're sleeping under the stars. You know, it's rain, shine, it don't matter. You're sleeping there. And if you can't sleep, you're probably going to jail where I come from because there's no place that you can be after 10 o'clock. You're not supposed to be out. You know, it doesn't matter if you're adult or not. If you're adult and got money, then yeah, okay, yeah. Everybody's going to turn a blind eye to you. But if you ain't got no money, they already know who doesn't have any money. So they're waiting to bust you. They're sitting on the corner waiting for you to go to the store. Because as soon as you leave that house, they've already got a predestined objective.
Yeah.
So actually in Santa Cruz, it's ironic. After 11 o'clock, you're supposed to be awake, not asleep if you're homeless, because it's illegal to sleep on public property.
Exactly.
Or to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night.
Exactly. Because
the limit. So you can stay awake and walk around. That's legal in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, because the bars are open and the coffee shops are open till all hours of the night.
Well,
but if you go to sleep, then
if you have money, as you point
yeah,
out. But
exactly.
For homeless people, nothing's open. Well, the there are a couple of all-night restaurants that are open, I guess.
You can't even go to the bathroom. I mean, people will deny you the bathroom because you look homeless. If a person in a three-piece suit comes in there and he doesn't have to buy anything and says, I need to use the restroom, oh, they're quick to let that guy use the bathroom. But if I come in wearing my crooked hat and my cut-off shorts and I ask him to use the restroom, he's going to look me up and down and say, sorry, the restroom's for customers only.
Rath, we have running a bit short on time. Why don't you give us a little more poetry, make it up as you go if you want. And also, if you got any quick accounts from the street, I want to hear that.
I'll do the quick accounts on the street right now because I'm running dry on my poetic tendencies right now. Actually, you were asking earlier, Robert, if there were any squats, and there are plenty of indoor squats in Santa Cruz, but I can't name those locations on the radio because those
right.
are my squats.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And there could be a...
How many would you estimate that you know of in Santa Cruz?
I have probably 11 squats that
are
available.
These squats, were they friends with houses, or are there places that are just not being used that you are making, you know, that you
these
have
are,
liberated those places?
I have liberated... probably about five of them are squats where friends that, friends that sell things that aren't for regular consumers. But I also have squats in places all around downtown and Pacific. There are exits to the movie theater. There are exits to many apartment buildings. And they have basements. And... we just got a question right now, and there was another lady that has joined the studio, and she asked if, she asked how we maintain our health. There is no such thing. We actually are.
Churches help us with socks, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's the story right there, Duck, straight up.
What's the story with meth? I heard a lot about meth being a big comer in Santa Cruz, having a lot of impact. Are you guys big into meth?
I used to be big into meth because of the simple fact of it was easier to be spun out and go run around all night than it was
to
find...
Have to deal with the loitering laws.
Yeah, deal with loitering laws, deal with the cops are harassing you because you're sitting someplace because you're so tired now that you'll go to sleep anywhere. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. If it looks safe and it feels safe, you're going to sleep there. And it's easier to just get spun out and tweak out all night and then get in with the bad crowd.
None of us look drugged out or frightening.
So yeah, even when we are drugged out and frightening.
So what about the... what about my trying to remember what I just thought? While I'm thinking about it, you go ahead.
Meth?
Yes, meth story. Right.
I'm an ex-speed addict, and I was about 150 pounds the last time I was through Santa Cruz, and now I'm...
like 6'1".
Now I'm 6'1 and 220. And the reason why I put on that weight is because I quit speed, and I don't want to die. And I have a baby in L.A. with a girl who's squatting in L.A., and she's, you know, due in about 7 months, and I am not going to be on drugs for that kid. I'm going to give that kid all my heart. I don't have money. I don't have nothing, but I got love.
Now, do any of the rest of you, Nemo, you, Duck, you, Sierra, any children?
No, birth control was a beautiful invention in the 70s. One day, but when we're homeless, we're not going to put through kids who had to deal with what we had to deal with.
I got a daughter, but my mom helped basically conspire to take my kid away from me because she didn't want to raise it because she was too spun out on meth to take care of herself.
So it's in a foster
alone.
Home now? Or?
No, she signed it away to adoption, and they tricked me into thinking that I had no rights as a father because I was under 18, so they signed my baby away, and they basically made me think that the only thing I had to do was sign her away.
How about you, Nemo? Anything from you? Any children?
No. No, I don't.
Just checking.
I have a little girl on the East Coast, and it was a beautiful punk rock girl. I was squatting in what's called C Squat, which is in a very broken down part of New York. And
Lower East Side?
The first hand gesture my daughter learned was when she saw a police badge, she would flip them off.
I'd like to read a little something I just wrote right now.
Okay, go ahead, Sierra.
Dreaming of sleeping inside, hot showers and hot food, sleeping on all night, and police asking me to move. No police asking me to move. No rude yuppies to school telling me to go to work and get an education. UCSC punk, what are you doing? 675 and the president with no clue in. A country who cares, but not about us and not about you. And what are you doing?
If anybody wants to call in and ask any questions of Sierra, Nemo, Rat, or Duck, or Robert for that matter, and we also have another mystery guest in the studio who will shortly reveal herself, I hope even more so, give a call to 427-3772. We can either go for the mystery guest now, or we can wait. I think we probably
won't. What the fuck?
Go ahead, mystery
guest.
I'm
here, Robert. Yes. I was actually driving here from Capitola and listening on the radio, and I thought, this is so sweet. He's got a rat, a duck, a cat, and here comes a chick on her way.
Yes!
There we go! Farmhouse! Farmhouse all over again, 1984.
Hold on to your hats and your ears,
we all
folks.
Are. Well, this is just fascinating, and I think this is just great, Robert. I didn't know you were going to have some guests in the studio, but I love young people. And I have to tell you, as a 58-year-old woman, I'm so grateful that I'm not young today. And I don't have to
really?
Put up with and go through.
Too.
And
I will, but you know, not right now.
Well, hopefully you won't. I have two children and a couple of grandchildren, and I...
Scared to death?
Terrible. And I encourage my son to have a vasectomy. I beg him not to have children because it's just a nasty world.
That's the sad part is all the smart people aren't having kids and all the young people. If you go to Walmart, you see people with eight children. And if you go to JCPenney, you'll see people with one. And everybody who's hip to what's going on is like, I'm not having children. And all the dumb people are having children. And at least it's not my energy going on, or at least not my DNA going on, but it is my energy. And I hope the best for people to become enlightened. And Santa Cruz seems pretty enlightened for the places that I've been. I've been grown up in the Bay Area my whole life, and only one other place, which is San Francisco, had kind of an idea. But yeah, really? Because they hated on us anyways.
What are the best things about Santa Cruz?
This is such an enlightened young woman. I have to say, I don't know how old you are, but
21.
You are...
I just turned 21.
Yeah, you're just fabulous.
Thank you.
You're fabulous. And I heard you saying you were a university student.
Absolutely.
And you're homeless. You hang in there. I was up at that university for 11 years.
And they stare at you funny, too.
And I was just telling Robert today how many class issues I have. And I was up there for 11 years. I come from the South Bronx, so I come from no money. I'm used to not having money. Yeah, oh, Jersey boy.
You know, I was just learning about Jersey because I'm taking a Walmart Nation class, an upper division class, and it was telling us about how New Jersey was one of the biggest places... One of the biggest places where Newark, New Jersey was a concentration of African Americans, and how the European Americans would slowly move into the suburban areas and they would slowly build larger and larger developments after the World War II to be able to make that class distinction and make that race distinction as well. But one thing I want to say is it's not about color because we didn't all come from a rainbow. You have a country of origin, not a color. So start distinguishing yourself. I'm European American, Mediterranean, and Native American. So really, if you call yourself black or white, you got to get hip to that because you're not a color and you're not a rainbow.
I'm going to have to disagree a little bit, only in respect to my friends of color, because I know many people of color, especially black people, are very insulted when they say you don't see their color because that means you're not seeing their history.
Oh, you can see their color, but they're African American. They're not black, you know what I mean? They have a country.
That. I don't
they're
like that term anyway.
They're Nigerian. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. They're Nigerian, they're Jamaican, they're, you know what I mean?
They're African American.
Exactly.
But you have to recognize they are people of color.
Oh, absolutely.
We cannot understand what it's like to walk in a person's skin who lives in a dark skin because we're allowed in and out of environments.
Well, but you're a woman as well, and so you know what it's like to be discriminated as a woman. And no matter who, what color they are, they're like, oh, you're a woman, you can't do that. And that's why I can. And like I said, I was raised in the Bay Area. I lived in Oakland for 9 years, and I didn't learn about racism until I moved to Fremont. Yeah,
I can tell you're a city girl.
Absolutely,
that's very obvious. You definitely, you know, you definitely did not grow up on a farm.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I'd like to now, that's my dream, is to get a farm.
I want to ask you, what inspires you to pursue education? Are you doing that in hopes of having a career, or just to really, because you're a lifelong educator?
I don't believe that our country may make it very long in giving careers, but I love to read and I love to learn and I'm addicted to knowing, and that's just really what it is. I spend a lot of time alone, so a lot of time with books.
Questions for our guests, 427-3772. We are, of course, maintaining the legal limit by ignoring certain people in the studio. You can talk to any of us here, Rat, Duck, Sierra, Anita, Nemo, or Robert, please give a call if you want to talk to them, because or you can check us out on the streets. Anita is also a worker with actually the co-founder of MedX, which is a group that an individual operation, I would say, that distributes medical marijuana.
Anita is the founder of MedX. I started MedX 9 years ago. this month, and I do provide in-home delivery and support service for medically documented people. I provide them some very high-quality cannabis. But as everybody knows in town, we had a dispensary open up recently, which is an excellent thing. The city really needed to have a place where people could go to buy either a gram or a joint. I mean, again, it's not free. You're going to have to buy it. But at least you can go in there and buy, a small amount.
We have a caller, so we'll put the caller on here, and we'll see what's cooking here. Hi, we hope you're on Free Radio. Can you hear us?
Yes. What was that? A lightning bolt there?
Sorry?
There was like a... What is this?
You're looking at your computer?
It's on.
So what's up, caller? That sounds like the infamous Linda.
Well...
Linda, how are you doing?
I was going to say something, but I don't need more infamy.
Oh, okay. Well, you're infamous regardless of whether you need it or not. What can I say? So what? Got a question for any of our guests?
I'm not ready to deal with that for me.
By the way, you turn down your radio because otherwise you're getting a delay.
I'm not listening to the radio.
Oh, good. Okay.
I had to go in a different room. My brain doesn't work as
you're doing good.
High as it used
so
to.
If you got a question for
no, I wanted to add to the conversation part about our differentness and coming from somewhere, making this what makes us people. And I liked what the gals were saying, and I want to add my piece. There's a real erasure and invisibility of our ancestors to our Native American in this continent. And there's things we can do about it, but most people don't know because there's no information that gets out into the public in the commons. Some of us, I mean, if you can find anyone to do genealogy, find any of our ancestors. There's been so many generations in a row of deliberately blacking them out. You know, even like the pioneer era Bible people whose Bible was considered a legitimate legal organ in terms of births and deaths if the family had one, they didn't name.
My guests have a comment. Go ahead.
They didn't name people that were called half-breeds and worse.
Linda?
You know? And those are our people we come from. What?
Gotcha. Our guests have a comment.
Okay.
At least one of them does. Go ahead, Rhett.
I am part Native American myself.
Oh, good.
And Rhett, you also had a poem you wanted to read, did you not?
Yeah, I got one. Do I have time, Robert?
Okay, thanks for calling in, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
This is some poetry on the spot by the seat of my pants for one Mr. Robert Norse. On some pirate radio from me to you, yeah, Mikey Rat is back. Just a squatter punk from the East Bay, Berkeley gutter punks rule. I have not yet died. Nah, man, we're still alive. Can you spare some change for beer and food? Them tickets they gave me, I use them to wipe my ass.
Let me hear about them tickets, because you and I were talking about that on the way over, Rat. You got a ticket for what? You assaulted some person, attempted murder. What was the story?
No, I don't assault people. I camp and I drink a lot of beer. So I have one. I have two for open containers. I have one for, I can't say that on the radio.
You can say anything.
Well, anything you feel like saying, you can say on the radio. Don't feel obliged.
It's called the First Amendment.
Yeah.
The Fifth Amendment. Right, oh. Silence.
Oh, well.
The Fifth.
Okay, I'll put it this way. One for a pirate act. And then another one for just camping out. Well, yeah.
And you got one recently for violating the sleeping ban?
Yeah, I fell asleep in a cardboard recycling bin, and the trash man came and tried to pick me up, and as soon as I was about halfway up, I popped out of the dumpster can, and I said, "Hey, let me down."
And rather than compact you, they gave you a ticket.
The garbage man was cool. It just happened to be a cop, like, across the street, and when I was yelling at him, he walked over. "What are you doing in the cardboard recycling bin?" And I said, "I'm trying to sleep."
Anita, you had a point?
I did. I don't know if your listeners remember, but not that long ago, wasn't there a fellow, and I don't think it was very local, but I think it was in California, a homeless fellow who was actually sleeping in a dumpster and was actually crushed and killed, and I can't remember where it was. I'm really sorry.
Actually, there was a local incident,
yep.
Which was not a death, But Michael Rotkin's comment when it was pointed out that this was happening in Santa Cruz as well. Four people actually were being, I think, were involved with this, if I'm not mistaken, sleeping in a dumpster. It was at least one, and maybe it was four people. Maybe my producer remembers, because I think she wrote something about this. Producer, let me know about this. But our mayor, Mike Rotkin's response was, how could they be so stupid as to sleep in a dumpster?
I mean, where else are you supposed to sleep? At least he's got three walls, maybe four.
Mike Rotkin would tell you that we have one of the most enlightened cities in the country, and that people who are sleeping outside are not bothered. And
let's just say Mike Rotkin and I have a few differences.
I, too, have the same view. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Also, we're on the chat room at pagesincolor.com, and you can phone in at 427-3772. In the studio with us is a collection of various individuals of different ages, genders, and perhaps sexual preferences. I can't tell. I haven't researched it, but who knows? As the evening progresses, we may find out more about all these issues. Let us know about you. 427-3772 is the number to call in if you've got a question or a comment, or jump on Pages in Color. Medical marijuana is an issue I talk about regularly, and there is a new dispensary open that you visited, Anita. It's called a Greenway, and it's at 140 Du Bois. And I'm wondering, Anita, if you want, you can use this mic so they can have that mic over there so they can share it if they've got commentary. You're going to have to kind of belly up to the mic. We can share it. Let's get
belly
close,
up to
baby.
You.
You can belly up to me.
Any excuse, Robert.
Oh, boy, I love it. So what did you were kind of describing what you thought of that dispensary, both critically and also supportively.
Well, my first impression of the club, I was very impressed with the club. It's very clean, very new. There was a security guard at the door. New building, newly paved, big parking lot, quiet street. Not that close to the park as they would have made us, led us to believe. Okay, I'll tell you what I didn't like. So I was impressed when I pulled up. I liked how the outside looked. I was approached by a security guard, asked me for my documentation. I told him I didn't want to give him my documentation. I wanted to see Lisa to go get her, give me the grand tour.
That's Lisa Molyneux, the person who put the club together. Right?
Of course. And, of course, you know I was on your show with her, and I've spoken to her two or three times. So I kind of thought if I went over there, she'd give me the grand tour. But she actually wouldn't allow me access to the club unless I registered and gave her my documentation, which I did. I gave her my documentation, and I went back there. And, again, I was impressed when I walked in the back room because there were several rooms there. But the one that she was dispensing out of was very nicely fixed. She had three bakery cases with several shelves. I would say she had about 12 to 15 varieties of cannabis, ranging from a low-grade Mexican to high-grade sativa and indica. She carried kief and hash. She had some baked goods there. I didn't notice a cash register or people getting receipts or anything like that. So, you know, it raised a couple of questions for me. You know, I felt a little bit of envy and a little bit of jealousy. I hate to admit that because those are nasty qualities to have. I would have preferred it was me that got to open that dispensary. But because I am a low-income person and live in low-income housing, you know, class is an issue with me. It always has been since I was a kid. I have 11 years of university education under my belt, and really haven't held a job since I got my last degree in 1995. My interest is in doing social work, but not being obligated to any agency or having to answer to any particular segment of this county, because I do love this county. This county has been very good to me. It helped me raise my children. It's provided me with a great quality of life. At the same time, Robert, what can I actually say about this dispensary other than I really do wish them well? I don't wish them any harm, but I want them to go about things properly. You know, like when somebody comes in and shows their documentation, do they call the doctor right then before they allow you to purchase? Or do they allow you to just go straight back and make your purchase and check your doctor's letter afterwards for their own safety, just something they should think about. I know they allowed me and Victor in the back. We didn't purchase anything, and ultimately, nor did we register. You might get a little annoyed at me for that, but I really don't want to contribute to the numbers at her club, because she did say to me it was a numbers game, and I don't want to play games. I'm ill. I'm happy to be alive. And every day I'm very uncomfortable, and I feel very sick. But I still, you know, and I love my cannabis.
You want to tell us what your illness is so people can understand that?
Well, first of all, I have advanced cirrhosis, so I'm extremely tired, and I have a very poor appetite.
So does my mom.
I have diabetes.
So does my mom.
I have to have my gallbladder removed. I have two ruptured discs. Three degenerated discs and severe stenosis. I need back surgery and I'm now addicted to my painkillers, which sucks. So I have some severe illnesses. somebody's creative spirit going as I'm speaking. It must be the topic of cannabis, although nobody is medicating at this moment.
How do the uninsured people or people who are on federally paid for medical aid be able to get cannabis medication as well? Because I'm on government medical aid, and I've been curious because I've been diagnosed with, you know, migraines and such, and I'm wondering, how do I get on medical marijuana aid?
And just to add to that question, I'm on Social Security for manic depressive alcoholism. And
I can tell because you haven't looked at me in the face once.
I collect medical marijuana, and I want to collect medical marijuana, and I'm wondering how I go about doing that.
Well, first of all, you have to be documented, but there's no health program that I know where you get WAM for free. Even WAM that professes to give WAM, their medication to their clients for free, it's not free. They pay donation or they pay labor in some way. I, unfortunately, am not a grower. I have growers up in Humboldt and Mendocino County, and I travel up there about every 3 months. I wish I had local vendors, but I don't. They don't seem to call me. I think it's my New York attitude. But
I have to talk to you later about that.
We can talk. Yeah. And I'll give you a card. But I carry very high-quality medicine. I only carry good medicine. And this is why even I think if local growers did call me, I might be hesitant to purchase product from them, because the people I go to grow because their son died, and they provide to the clubs up in San Francisco and for the AIDS community. I know the medicine has no mold on it. It's all organic. It's never been keefed, and it's real medicine. And what I do is I bring it to people's homes, and I use my education in that way. I have a master's in social work and a master's in public education, and I care about people. The problem is I'm poor myself. I don't have insurance. I have to pay cash for my medical illnesses, but fortunately I'm not homeless. And whenever I think about how badly I have it, I just feel so rich when I can close my door. I have a baby one-bedroom apartment, but I feel very rich because I can go home, right? I have a home.
Hotels, too. We got a hotel. We feel the same way. Gracious.
Gracious, but it's so transient. And I don't know whether it's your youth or I've kind of forgotten what it was like for me in the 60s, that it doesn't matter if you're homeless because you're young. And you're healthy.
It matters,
and it's fun.
But what are you going to do? You know what I mean? I got to go to school every day regardless of where I'm sleeping. You know what I mean?
How did you get to go in school? What? Because you have to pre-register and apply.
Yeah, no, I went to a community college out in Hayward, and actually I was sleeping next to a generator with my boyfriend here, Duck, and we would sleep every day, and the sun would wake me up, and I would get on my bike and ride to BART and pay the $1.10 to BART and then ride my bike from BART to school, which was about over
$1.25, actually.
Exactly, which is over 2 miles, and I would go to school, and I would go every day, and I made the grades to be able to... I actually didn't even apply to UCSC, I just applied to Cal, and they offered me admissions along with Riverside, Merced, and Davis, so, yeah.
Well, you know, there was a time there were quite a few homeless people that were students at the university, and they actually lived in the woods.
Actually, they have an RV camp there now, and I was actually very surprised to hear that. But
they had one several years ago, and they replaced that and just moved it.
Yeah, it's in the back corner now, you're right.
let me ask you about this this is not probably not relevant to you guys, but because it's more of a middle class deal. We're not talking middle class here, but Tent University, of course, was something done by an activist section of the students last April. You may remember if you were in town. Were any guys in town for Tent University?
Yes.
Well, they had they were beaten, you know, beaten and tortured by police on April 19th, and they abandoned their plan to have a 24-hour camp out for that 5-day period. Instead, they moved it to the quarry, and they had a daytime deal at the Tent University. But they have recently talked about reviving Tent University, and last Sunday there was a meeting in the park, San Lorenzo Park, about this. Did any of you get to that meeting?
No, but it's good to know about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that a SAFE member, Valerie Christie, did get to the meeting. I don't know if she's listening or near a phone or feels like calling in and giving a report, but if anybody went to that Tent University meeting in San Lorenzo Park on Sunday, I'd like to know about it. I know that there were numerous students who were arrested for essentially congregating after 9 o'clock at night and then refusing to leave when the police said this is an illegal assembly. Why? Because there was a tent structure up. It wasn't even a violation of the camping ban, because the camping ban is, I guess maybe there's a dusk camping ban on campus. No, that's only for vehicles. There is a camping ban prior to 11 o'clock at night on campus. I'm not entirely sure about that. And the public documents I've requested have not been given, though they are now 4 months overdue by the SC Police Department, so I'm still waiting for those. But if anybody wants to call in, 427-3772, you can talk to Nemo Rat Duck Sierra and or, last but hardly least, Anita. Or actually, the very last is Robert. That's me. I'm available. Come and get me. 427-3772. It looks like you're writing something over there, Sierra. You got a poem for us?
Yeah, I just actually wrote another one. It's not very good, but it has inspired me by talking with you, and I feel very pleased because this is obviously very spontaneous, but I appreciate somebody wanting to actually hear our words, and I just actually sketched this down real quick. Let's see if I can do this right, because it's a little different rhythm as it changes through. But how can we sleep when the police refuse us keeping the peace without receipts of purchase from local stores, when we sit in relief without our people friends who lend us our food when they're hungry and their change when they're cold, those who hold our items without theft or cold-hearted acts? Guess the friends are like me, the homeless on the streets who relate to my needs, those of house, food, and safety. Thanks to the kids on the streets for watching my shit and watching my back, because really I wouldn't make it without y'all.
Whoa.
Thank you.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to take a brief breather here, play a little music, and then maybe do a little tape so we can get a chance to sort of see where we're at. If you have any questions during that period, I will interrupt the music and the tape for you to talk to our guests. 427-3772 is the number to call if you want to get in touch here at Free Radio. So do it if you want.
Longing to be free, sometimes you
And that was a song again by Morgan Firestar. And it was Children in a Cage, again, from No Strings Attached. We've gotten some guests. Here's a downtown. I just got handed an obituary for Armando Plastina, downtown regular, who I don't recognize, but perhaps Anita does. Anita, do you want to describe this?
Armando, he actually was partners. I can't remember her name now. What's that lovely lady that runs the Coney Island hot dog stand?
I know her, but
you know,
I don't
the
know
short little sweet woman with the gray hair?
Yes.
But her and Armando were together for many years, and he had MS. He was a very, very handsome fellow, but very quickly deteriorated, and he was only 44 years old. He died on the 17th up at the Land of Medicine Buddha up in Soquel. I think he's originally from New York, but I really liked him. He was a very sweet fellow. I made deliveries to him about a year or two ago, but he must have moved away or been up at Land of Medicine Buddha for quite a while because I haven't heard from him. But unfortunately, he is dead and gone. And that's a sad note. What else, Robert?
Anything else you want to say about him? I guess you just said it. Rhett, you're still in the studio. Anything further you want to say before we move on to the next segment here?
No, I'm here to enjoy your show, Robert.
Oh, please do. Please do. Now, again, I want to remind callers or non-callers who might become callers, 427-3772 is the number to call.
Please call in.
Yes, please call in. If you got questions, comments, various unusual noises. I'll take this opportunity to do a little gum chewing, maybe to encourage you to do something to stop the obnoxious sounds coming. Nah, that wouldn't be a good idea. I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to play a little tape from the streets, and we will respond to calls. Anita and I may be tuning up our own rendition of the very famous Downtown song, The Santa Cruz Way. That is, of course, you can always hear that number by SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, group that meets every Wednesday, and last Wednesday had its 90th week of continued regular weekly Take Back the Sidewalk, feed people who come by performing. And it's not just one of these groups that sits behind a podium and performs and tells you to stay in the audience. You get to join, you get to even do some solos, you get to stand up in a soapbox, scream Stop the War in Iraq, as I often do, and there you go. So while we're waiting for the Downtown song, which Anita and I are going to essay shortly, here's some street stuff.
10:05, we're in front of Rouge here, talking with
David Allen. I'm the Leprechaun.
And Mr. Leprechaun, I understand you've been, you occasionally show up at a Sunday meal, which was run by the Potter's Hand at the Vets Hall.
Yes, we used to have the Potter's Hand. Used to join here, and so now, underneath the Vets Hall in the bunker, we have church. It's called the Potter's Hand with Dennis Adams as a pastor, and my name is David Adams, and we're there.
Relation or?
Family.
Uh-huh.
And we're there from 10:30 till 11:30, and we got some good spiritual food, and then we feed you breakfast, sodas and coffee and all good stuff. Come on, check it out.
Yep, 10:30 every Sunday morning at the Vets Hall in the bunker in the basement.
Yes, and we have to pay for that. Dennis Adams and the Potter's Hand does, and we supply all fresh food, all fresh everything, and the hot word of God.
Cool. Well, thank you, and we'll be talking with
David.
David, appreciate that.
Peace to meet you. I'll come on, see you now.
I'm here at the Mime Troupe 1 minute before the show's about to start, about 3:15 on Sunday, the 2nd of October, talking with
Megan Shebley
and
Alice O'Donnell.
It looks like the show is starting, so quickly, you can't live here because you're costed out?
Financially excluded, yeah. We wouldn't be able to pay rent, and after that, we would never be able to purchase, and we're in our 40s. And I think if we were in our 20s, we would be willing to do it, but not in our 40s.
From Amherst?
Yes, from Amherst, Massachusetts.
Well, welcome, pay your money, and get the fuck out.
Thank you.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Okay,
so it's about 4:35. I'm here at the San Francisco Mime Troupe, actually the end of its last show for the summer. And I'm talking about to talk with your name, sir.
Michael Gene Sullivan.
Michael, what parts did you play in this particular production?
I play Ray, who is the CIA...
Uncle Ray, if
Uncle
you don't mind.
Uncle Ray, yes, Uncle Ray, who's really the Mephistopheles of the show. He is, you know, getting people to buy into globalization as a way to make the world a better place, and international capital is the best entree into doing good around the world.
And the name of the show, of course, is...
Doing Good. And I also play Rangda, the demon beast, who is a... Indonesian dance and puppet theater character who... just a second. Where's the...
Oh, cool. So worth it. Ramidas, who...
Rangda.
Rangda.
Yeah, he's a traditional Indonesian puppet and dance demon who in this show is... I'm playing Rangda. Rangda's playing Uncle Sam. There's a scene of a street theater company doing a show in Indonesia, and that scene is actually... pretty much verbatim, taken from the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That scene actually happens in the book, where these people are confronted with how deep the feelings of hatred to us, to America, not Americans, but America, runs in some places.
The Mime Troupe has only played in the U.S., or have you played abroad this year?
This year we've only played in the U.S., but we've been, you know, taking shows to Europe a few times, East Asia... not Southeast Asia.
Not Indonesia. Not Ecuador?
No, we've been to Colombia, but not Ecuador. Cuba, Mexico, Hong Kong, Korea. So the company's been all over the place.
And you've been with the company for?
Since 1988.
You didn't know Jale Weissman then?
I've met him. Yeah, I've met Jale. We take our messages around, but frequently, like a show like this, we've considered, well, do we want to try to take this show overseas? And actually, the message of this show is much more important domestically, because taking this show to other countries, they know this. They know this is how we're ripping them off. They know this is how multinational corporations work in tandem with the United States government. So sometimes we go to other countries with very domestic messages, and they're like, yeah, it's redundant for them. What they want to see is us dissect American politics, and the Americans need to see us talk about foreign policy.
Now, have you ever had an offer to do this show in a TV studio?
No, one time we did actually do a video shoot of one of our shows in a television studio, but we couldn't get anyone to air it, and we've done some really fine, high quality for us at least, video shoots of shows that we've done everything we can to take the shoot all the way to the last level of just needing someone to say they'll produce it. I mean, you know, on air somewhere, and there is not a PBS station that we can get to touch us. No one's going to say, oh yeah, we're going to run 1600 Transylvania Avenue and have you talk about corporate personhood, and while they're taking corporations from Ford or
groups like Amy Goodman's Democracy Now.
Well, Democracy Now in itself is a production of somebody else. You know, they are a show that's on another. On public something, so
they get funding in order to do what they're doing,
right? And what would be most likely is that they would interview us. You know, we could speak on Democracy Now, and we could do things, but they don't really have the money to be able to buy the time on television or something to be able to just put an hour of airtime.
Community TV stations have ever offered you an opportunity to come on?
Not
Cruz, for example, is community television.
Only in doing interviews. But not
accept such an offer if we arranged it for next year.
If we could get a PBS station somewhere to manage to put on one of our shows that we felt was up to television standards, that would be great. We really did look quite a bit, especially after Mr. Smith Goes to Obscuristan, which was our most our largest shoot. We really put a lot of time and energy and money into that.
2 years ago?
Three years ago. Mm-hmm. Really hoping that we could get a station, KTEH, someone to pick it up. And a lot of stations don't want to put on our shows because of the politics. A lot of stations don't want to put on our shows because they don't like to put on plays on television. They're not sure if it translates to the small screen. And it's like, well, you know, you won't know until you do it.
Now, community TV, if community TV offered to do this, that would be smaller than PBS. Would you still be interested? I'm looking for Santa Cruz to offer this and get actually some record of the show. You actually have records of your shows, but they're kind of primitive and archival, right?
Mm-hmm. No. No, actually, we have, like I said, we have some fairly high quality.
Of all your 46 years?
No. No, some of the shows, unfortunately, when those members who have been around for, you know, 30 years or so, they can't even remember the shows. What we do try to do is get a recording of each show. And we do a videotape each year, and we get a recording each year. But we can't always produce them. Ah, thank you.
More money for your bucket.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. We can't always produce them for release. We haven't released it like a CD in 4 years. Because
you only have about 7 or 8 of your shows on CD or tape, right?
Yeah, and the tapes are just not available. We had a documentary shot on us a few years ago, which the company that shot it, it's a really fine documentary of when we worked with Josh Kornbluth, creating Mr. Smith Goes to Obscurestan, and they couldn't find anyone to fund the last part of it. We had a 40th anniversary 7 years ago, I guess, and they shot a huge documentary. We couldn't get any funding to finish the 40th, the documentary of the 40th anniversary of one of the oldest, most reputable theater companies in the United States. We couldn't find anyone who will touch us to give us the money, even the NEA, to fund this culturally important video event.
How much would it cost?
Well, that would cost a lot. I think it was like $50,000.
But to do a document about one of your shows would cost considerably less.
Well, when we did the depending on the quality, the shoot for Mr. Smith would have been about $50,000. But we got a lot of donated time, a lot of donated camera work. We had cranes in the park and lights and everything, and it was really a very high quality shoot. Now to bring it over to get it to the final point where we can sell them is like $5,000 because it's just we have to pay tax.
You're waiting for a $5,000 donation to get this thing available for the public to actually be able to see it in their home and in the privacy of their own huda.
Yes, they have their video or DVD. And the thing is, and because I'm a collective member at the Mime Troupe, I know that if somebody out there did want to give us that money, it would have to be dedicated to that cause. Because if we just got $5,000, we have so many other debts we'd end up wanting to put it into. We need someone who can really dedicate the time or the money or some way to raise the money specifically for that so that we can, like I said, share the message across the country. There's so many places that we can't tour anymore because schools have lost so much funding. You know, we used to play the universities of Wisconsin and Ohio, the whole tours through there. And the schools have lost so much money, both from the Department of Education and from NEA cuts because they would get NEA grants to bring us in. Now they can't afford it. And we're not cheap. We're, you know, this is our full-time job for half the year, so we have to pay rent in San Francisco. So, I mean, the actors and musicians, we actually have to make money doing this.
So if we have some philanthropists out there wanting to kick down $5,000 for the completion of Mr. Smith Goes to Obscurestan, or let's say money for the Mime Troupe generally in terms of a large grant, who should they contact? How should they get in touch with you?
Well, they can go to the best thing. If they wanted to give us a bunch of money, they should just call us at San Francisco Mime Troupe, 415-285-1717, and speak with Peggy Rose, who is our general manager. And, you know, we can find some way to be able to bring this message to a greater audience. And it's also difficult. It's difficult because we're now right. This is the last show of our season, which means everybody in the company has to find another job for the next 6 months to go off and do other things and at the same time have time free to create our shows at night. So that cuts into how much we can, the collective can be involved in those next steps. We need it to be so specific so that we can go, okay, for these 2 weeks, we're all going to go into the studio and re-record anything we need, you know, and if we have the money and we know all that's in place, then we can dedicate the time and the energy it's going to take to reassemble the cast if we want to, or go in and be, if we have to do any further editing or looping or anything, because we really want, there's a reputation of leftist theater and political theater in general that what you're doing is going to be cheap. It's going to look cheesy. People have to sit through the didactic crap and, you know, and poor production values in order to try to glean some message, you know. And what the Mime Troupe has always tried to do is have as high as we can production values for doing free shows in the park, you know, to have something that looks as polished and professional as we can so that the audience is as entertained as it can be and that the message is a clear part of the show. But without the entertainment part, the message will get... Well, people will ignore us. And the same has to go for anything we release on video or DVD.
How many shows have you done this summer?
Oh, God. I don't know, 60?
Is that typical, or is your count down?
Well, it might be a little more this year. We extended our summer. Normally, we would have closed on Labor Day, would have been the last show, and then we might have done two or three shows after that.
Today is October 2nd.
Right, yeah. And so we played for an extra month, and we did more free shows. One of the things we're also hoping to do is do more free shows for colleges and universities and community colleges in September for the next few years in the Bay Area. Normally, we would have gone down and then tried to mount a tour, a national tour. But because, like I said, the touring circuit is kind of drying up for a lot of theater companies, not just for the Mime Troupe, we have this extra time, and we want to see if financially it makes sense for us to be able to play. Like this year, we had this wonderful crowd in Santa Cruz because we're playing during the school year. Most years, we would have been here a month and a half ago, and students wouldn't have been in yet. We also did a show recently at Chabot College, a free indoor evening show. We want to play at Laney College. We want to do all the colleges that we can in the Bay Area free in the evening, indoors, for students during the semester, because that's going to be a way for us to, you know, kind of keep people involved in the Bay Area. We're known by college students in the rest of the country, but not enough at home.
Plus, you might be able to make some money off of it in terms of donations, right?
Well, yeah.
Will this show, this performance, pay for itself based on what you're likely to get today?
We'll see. It's hard to tell. Our budget for each week is somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000. That's how much we have to make.
So you have to make about $15,000 per show here?
It depends on how many shows we do. Like, we did a show at Chabot in the middle of the week. So we did three shows this week. Like I said, $25,000 to $35,000, depending on, you know, the year and how big the cast is and things like that, or how many musicians we have. So our costs shift, but it's a lot of money. And we have some operating grants from the NEA, from a hotel tax fund in San Francisco. We do have some grant money, but because we don't take corporate grants, and strangely enough, they don't offer very much. Because we don't get...
Gain Corp didn't offer you...
Strangely enough, the Ford Foundation Mime Troupe thing just didn't work out. So there are a lot of different issues around...
Running off with the bucket.
Oh, yeah, that's... Well, luckily, I know who she is. And I don't take all the cookies.
Yeah, those cookies. We want cookies.
Yeah.
Good ginger snap. What do you call them? Ginger?
Organic ginger snaps.
Are they corporate ginger snaps?
Well, they're from Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's Corporation, large corporation.
I don't know.
I was criticized for having a Trader Joe's bag and for not shopping locally.
I don't go to Trader Joe's very often. Somebody donated the cookies.
Go ahead with what you're saying.
Yeah. I shop at Rainbow.
Skipping past Trader Joe's.
To get from the audience or from, you know, the government, which is our money. In a few weeks, we'll go back and look at how much money we made to make sure that we can afford to continue to do the free shows in the fall. And we'll see.
Now, this is another subject. What's the most hostile audience, or have you had any hostile audiences in the last few years?
Well, I remember we did Mr. Smith Goes to Obscuristan in Indianapolis while Dick Cheney was in town, and it was a very Republican crowd. They were there actually because they were subscribers to the particular theater season at an art center, so they had no idea. There's maybe 40% of the audience knew who we were, and 60% were just there to see mime. And
you were a silent artist.
Yes, and we had a big discussion afterwards. And the thing was, is that they didn't leave, and they agreed with a great deal of the show.
There was no hissing and booing, no bananas and rotten fruit hit the stage.
No, we don't. Generally, the crowds are big enough to keep those people at bay. We get threats. You know, oh yeah, we've got death threats and bomb threats and people that threaten to disrupt the show and stuff like that. But
no indictments from the feds?
Not yet, no. The last time that something like that came up was when the NEA had an obscenity clause that they put in to all the grants, and you had to sign this thing in order to get NEA money. And so we signed it, and then we did like the most obscene show the next year.
What was it called?
That was Rats. And it had, you know, just people, and it was all about obscenity. So the show was about getting a grant from the NEA and having to deal with obscenity and politics. And
that's one of those shows we'll never be able to see or hear because it's lost in the archives.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that show, I don't even know if we have a soundtrack from it. Because that, those were in the days when we simply did not have the money at all to do videotaping of shows.
Nobody
or
snuck a tape recorder into the audience and recorded.
They did. They didn't tell us. And so that's always been very difficult. And then we, starting with Seeing Double, we did start investing money to do video shoots. But then you kind of get what you pay for. You know, the video shoot of Seeing Double wasn't that good. You know, the shoot we had of last year's show actually ended up having technical problems in it.
Seeing Double was what year?
It was 1989. We ended up doing the show for 2 years.
And Rats was considerably earlier?
No, Rats was that was the following year.
But you do have maybe a video shoot of Rats.
No. No, the only reason we have one of Seeing Double was because of the subject matter. That was the one about Palestine and Israel and the two-state solution. Mm-hmm. So there are organizations who donated time, you know, but nobody donated for Rats, strangely enough. And then after that, we realized, well, if we're going to do it, we need to really put the money into it to shoot the show every year. And some of them aren't very good shoots. It's just one camera sitting out there, and it's kind of dull. And other shoots have, you know, five cameras. And those are the ones that were really, you know, the big shoots are the ones that we're trying to make sure to get to those people who can't see a mime troupe show. Because if you just have a camera sitting in front of the stage, you don't really get the sense of theater, you know, and movement. You don't get the sense of the audience or the pit or the set or the life of doing a show outdoor in the park. You just kind of see a set piece. And so like I said, that's why it costs so much for us to do the shoot.
Here comes the woman who stole the bucket here.
She's our stage manager.
Did she take the ring?
Yes.
Only one cookie. She only got one cookie.
She only brought
disrespect for the audience.
She ate all the rest of the cookies.
That's quite a big bucket of cookies here, too.
Yeah.
Any comments about Santa Cruz audiences? And I mean, critical or laudatory or otherwise?
It was a great crowd. I mean, one of the things that was really nice, again, about having the chance to play during the school year is we got students who had never seen the Mime Troupe show before, or any Mime Troupe show, and people who come to see us and have seen us for 30 years. So it's nice to see that mix. You know, not every place do we get that. Some place we get, and most places, we just get people who've seen us over and over again with a fringe of new people. And yeah, and in Santa Cruz, I like I said, I think specifically because we're playing in the school year, this was just great. Had a big explosion of, we haven't had a crowd that was this big and boisterous since 2000, I would say.
How would you estimate the crowd? How large?
I would say maybe 700.
Considering we're in the middle of a bus strike here, that's significant,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, and we were having a hard time starting the show, also, because we want to wait for the audience, and people were still streaming in, and we could see them crossing the footbridge behind us. And so we were like, should we wait? How much longer is this going to take? We've got to start, you know. But it was great, and we always, you know, we've always come down here when we were playing indoors, downtown, or outdoors, because the audience has always been enthusiastic and supportive.
Is doing good an unusually short show time-wise? Because I seem to remember intermissions in past shows. Or is that just my imagination?
No, we don't. Most park shows don't have intermissions. This show is about the regular length of a mime troupe show. It's around an hour and 15 minutes. It's different than a lot of mime troupe shows. A lot of mime troupe shows are grander in scale and style. This show is much more a realistic style show. What we do have in some shows is not an intermission. We have what's called a stretch, where we'll stop and one of the characters will talk to the audience and in character do something that helps get them up. They get to stretch their legs for a second, and then we continue with the show. That's if the show's coming is like an hour and a half. We know the audience needs to get up. But, yeah, the show is, you know, about typical mime troupe length show.
Anything you want to say to folks out there about, I don't know, anything you've learned this summer or anything you think we should know if we want to see continued mime troupe activity next year and in the years to come?
Well, one of the things I would say is make sure, get on the website, get on our email list, so that, which you can do on the website, so that you will always know where we are. Like we say, the FBI knows where we are. You should, too. And also,
have you had any problems with the FBI?
It's hard to tell. It's not like they come and knock on the door. Strangely enough, and this is going to sound, you know, very conspiracy theory-ish, last year we were rehearsing the show, and somebody came up, a guy who lived in the neighborhood, said, you know, somebody's filming your building from across the street in a black van?
Well, you are terrorists. We know that.
Yeah. And so we go, and there's somebody in this van with a camera, you know, behind tinted glass, and as we walk up to the van, it pulls off. And we're like, well, who is, if they're shooting a documentary, they need to be a little more open. So that was the only thing I was like, wow, maybe it means we're that important, you know. But generally, I think we're left alone. I think because the FBI still goes, mimes, how dangerous could that be? But in general, also, like I said, in terms of people helping out, one of the things we look for is just involvement. We teach free workshops every summer for 10 weeks in order, people come from all over the world to study with us, and it's a free workshop.
Up in San Francisco.
Up in San Francisco.
The same number you gave before.
Yeah.
Give it again.
415-285-1717. We teach theater workshops, how to create political musical comedy, how to direct, act, and write in your shows about their own people's own issues. And then when those people go back home, they continue to work on stuff, but they also help us create a network of political theaters that can, you know, we can share information with them and perhaps be able to go to their community at some point and do a show.
Any major problems internally in the mime troupe that come up particularly? I mean, have you had any major factional splits or divisions that you care to air so we can gossip about you?
Well, I mean, we are a collective, so we always have our struggles. We always have the issues that we're dealing with on, you know, what show should we do? What's the struggle? What's the important issue this year? But we just have actually added two new collective members, Lisa Jorge Garcia, who was in last year's show, and Christian Kajigal, who was in Veronica of the Mounties, are both our newest collective members in there in this summer show.
The total number of people, how many in the collective?
12 right now. Oh, 11 and a half. The other one person is kind of comes and goes. He.
Are you guys waiting to ask questions if you are?
So that's, like I said, so we have 12 members. We have a meeting coming up in a couple of days where we'll start discussing our plans for next year.
Decisions by consensus or by majority vote?
Majority.
What happened to consensus?
I think we never did consensus.
No.
Because we need to have, what we rely on is a loyal opposition. If somebody disagrees, like if there were people in the mime troupe this summer who did not think this was the show we should be doing, they felt pretty strongly about it.
What show would they have preferred?
They would have preferred something that was, in a grander style. Something was more about the elections that we just had. People wanted something about the occupation. Some people wanted something about people being imprisoned simply because of some vague connection to a terrorist organization. They wanted something. People had a lot of different issues that they brought up.
Were those actually scripts that were written, or just notions? Who writes the script?
Different people. I mean, we write.
Collective members, or?
Oh yes, general. This show is actually not all written by collective members. Most of the shows are written by collective members. We brought in two outside writers this time because we're trying to generate more writers.
Plus, you're adapting a book, right?
Yeah, and we're adapting a book. Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. So different people, you know, we write out scenarios, and then what we do is we don't try to write a script and pick scripts. We write scenarios, and then we argue about the scenarios and we pick something. But what we rely on is, like I said, loyal opposition. You vote against it, but if the majority wins, then that's it, because we're going to be on stage. So if you're in the show and you don't like it, you still want it to be the best show possible, and you still want to get the political message across. So other organizations do it by consensus. We do it by majority.
And this happens, what, in March or in February or in January?
Whenever we can come up with the thing. This show we didn't decide on until April.
Begin rehearsals in May or something?
End of May.
And how many weeks rehearsals go into this show?
Four or five.
How many hours a day?
Eight or nine, you know, because we're a union company. So I think in this show, we're not completely union. 2 years ago, I mean, we're not all in the Actors' Equity Union. We have to have at least a certain percentage in. So, but we're a union company, so we go by union rules.
And the director is one person, or you shift the roles?
No. That's the thing is, you know, a lot of times people say you can't create art by committee. And to a certain extent, that's true. What the committee has to do is be empowered to delegate responsibility. You know, if you've got a director, the collective goes, you're the director. And that person is the director of that show. They're not artistic director of the company. They're not set designer. They're director of that show. And if the collective ever loses faith in that person during the production, we'll say, what the hell's going on, and have a meeting.
Has that happened?
Not since I've been around. It's happened, I know, back in the 80s it happened once. But generally speaking, we let somebody direct that we have faith in. The same
is that chronicled in the book you're now selling? I guess it's the history of the mime troupe?
I don't know. It may or may not be. The book really goes up until the early 90s. So I'm not, and I haven't read it yet. I haven't had time. So
in the book?
Oh, probably a little bit, because it starts in the early 90s, and that's when I was just starting with the collective, so I'm not sure. I know I'm in there somewhere. But so there's, you know, if you want to be a writer for the mime troupe, and, you know, if you're a collective member, you have to kind of prove in yourself as a writer on smaller shows with the company, youth project shows or whatever. If you want to be a director, you have to, like Victor, this is Victor Tellman's first directorial main stage for the mime troupe, but he's directed our youth project.
And have you directed yourself?
Oh, yeah. I've directed... a bunch of shows for the mime troupe.
Do you remember anyone that you have directed?
Let's see. I directed Coast City Confidential, Veronica the Mounties. I co-directed Mr. Smith Goes to Obscuristan. I wrote and directed 1600 Transylvania Avenue. I wrote last year's show. I've been doing a lot of writing and directing for the company.
You're a head waiter during the rest of the year?
No, now I go off and teach playwriting in high schools for the next 2 months, and then I've got a show opening in Los Angeles that I wrote.
Which is?
It's an adaptation of 1984.
Called?
1984. It's going to be playing at the Actors Gang. Tim Robbins is directing it. And it'll open at the Actors Gang in February. So if anybody's in Los Angeles in February and they want to come and see an Orwellian nightmare.
We don't need to go to Los Angeles.
No, actually, you could go to Los Angeles. You don't even have to go in the theater. You could just walk the streets, read the paper, go on the net. But, so we all do. Different people are already starting rehearsals for other shows. And then in a few, you know, in a few months, they'll start looking at their schedules to see how they can work in the work they can do with starting up the mime troupe again.
The oldest or longest member with the mime troupe you've still got?
Right now, that would be Bruce Barthol, who... He did play at Woodstock, I believe. He's actually on the road. He did lyrics for this show, and he's on the road with Country Joe, which unfortunately can't be called Country Joe and the Fish because of some weird legal thing. But Country Joe and the people who would be the Fish got back together like 2 years ago, and they're touring the world. And so Bruce comes in, writes lyrics for us, comes and does rehearsals and stuff, and then he goes to like London to play with Country Joe. But he's been in the company since, I think, 77.
But is he a part of the collective?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's one of the 12 people in your collective?
Yeah. He's the person who's been around longest is Dan Chumley. He came in the late 60s, but he's the one who's not really involved as much because he's directing a lot in Asia, and so he spends a lot of time out of the country.
Member of the collective?
Yes.
So you actually all come together from different countries to have these discussions, or is it...
Sometimes. It depends. Like, you know, like I said, Dan's not really been involved with the mime troupe as much in the last few years, but Bruce will be at the meeting. He's off right now with Country Joe somewhere, but he'll be here Wednesday in San Francisco for the next meeting. So we'll all get together as often as we can to discuss ideas and hot topics for the next show.
Well, you've cooled me off. I'm running out of things to ask, but I guess I could keep going. Is there anything I'll give you a second chance at this? Anything you want to conclude with?
Oh, God, it's hard to get me to conclude. I'd say it's great, like I said, having all the support down in Santa Cruz, and hopefully we'll be able to figure out some way to, through, you know, musical comedy, to eventually overthrow international capitalism and establish a worker state.
Strength through joy.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
All right.
And that was an interview from the last Mime Troupe show, just after the last Mime Troupe show, Doing Good, here in San Lorenzo Park about a month ago, or was it 4 weeks ago, or was it 3 weeks ago? I don't know. But it was sometime in that period of time. What the heck was this guy's name? Damned if I know, but if you ever get a chance, you can always spin back through the archives. The show should be archived pretty quickly at huffsantacruz.org. But pretty quickly may mean within the next week, I hope. We actually have, we caught up with a lot of shows, but now we're beginning to fall behind again. Hopefully we can get our techies to get together and do that. I don't mean the free radio techies, who are doing a damn good job holding the station together, but the techies who help with the Huff Santa Cruz website. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. Also, freakradio.org. You may be listening to us there. Phone line here is open, 427-3772. In the studio with me is Anita Henry. And my producer has been able to successfully track down the statement by Rotkin from the Santa Cruz Sentinel. I believe it was one of the farewell stories of Dan White, Sentinel reporter, before he left. He did a story about how four guys were almost killed in a Santa Cruz dumpster. And while some city council members might have taken this as an indication that folks can't find a safe and warm place to sleep at night, that wasn't Vice Mayor Rotkin, now Mayor Rotkin's take on it. And here's Becky quotes what was being said. And it's her quote is, Rotkin said, there are 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz. The city houses about 200 of them. That's not entirely true. And only four of them will be stupid enough to sleep in a dumpster. That was Rotkin's quote. Any comments, Anita?
Very poor choice of words on his part. Not very compassionate or empathetic. And actually, it's a pretty smart choice. If you're cold and there's nowhere to go, I would imagine you'd want to have some kind of shelter from the wind, at least, or the fog in the morning. What's tragic is there have been stories across the nation and in this state of homeless people that try to warm themselves in dumpsters and unfortunately have been killed. We haven't had that in our town yet. Hopefully we won't.
We've had guys dying of hypothermia right outside City Hall on a bench. Robert Wagner was mentioned, I guess, earlier on this show, I believe. Well, I promised earlier in the show that we would, the two of us, sing that hit Santa Cruz number, Downtown, the Santa Cruz Way. This is going to be no surprise, actually, to many listeners, because I played a rather so-so version. Actually, it had maybe even a better version than what we're about to do, because it had the guitar backup. And it came from the SAFE event, the Wednesday night event, of which the 90th was held yesterday. But this is a song which, of course, comes originally from Petula Clark's Downtown from the 60s. Just kind of a, you know, when you're alone and life is making you lonely, that sort of thing.
Robert was inspired to adapt the song.
So I put in some rather, you know.
Real lyrics?
Well, you know, some critical lyrics of the downtown police scene and the host scene. I guess if you want to find a note on which we can both agree, we can try to begin this this rendition.
Oh, let's do it. When you mentioned it to me today, I really got excited. I'm really looking forward to singing with you, Robert.
Okay. Well, hey, we're going to sing together here.
Let's do it.
Turn off your radio right now if you have any intelligence or a taste. But so you want to give me a note?
Let's we're going to be good. No, I need to remind you. I'm really not a singer. I don't usually
that makes
sing.
Two
but
of us
I
good.
Love these lyrics. I just think this is so appropriate. Here we go. When you're alone and rents are making you homeless, you can always go downtown. When you get laid off, all the cops and their friends will move you to and fro downtown. Just try and find musicians who can tolerate the city. Linger on the sidewalk and the police will say no sitting. How can you win? The fines are much higher there. They have forgotten you live here. Forgotten they care when you're downtown. There's lots of hate for you downtown. It's not so great for you downtown. Tickets are waiting for you. Don't hang around and let the squad car surround you. It's no movie show downtown. Try to sit down and then the host will remind you that it's time to go downtown. Just listen to the blaring of the motorcycles raging. Salute and show your papers or it's you they'll be caging. Spanging again. The crowds are much wider there. They'll walk past all your troubles. Step over your cares when you're downtown. With all the shops uptight downtown. Lit up so rich and bright downtown. Uniforms watching for you. When you stand up for the wretched and homeless, cops will drag you down downtown. They'll make you shut up or face the weekend and lock up, 'cause the merchants own
downtown. Yet you may find somebody poor like you to understand you. Someone who is getting screwed and needs a helping hand to challenge the wrong. So maybe we'll face them there. We can't forget all our troubles, but we'll share all our cares when we're downtown. Things will be real when you're downtown. Don't let them steal your rights downtown. Let's sing together tonight. Downtown, stand your ground. Downtown, stand your ground. Stop and speak out when the cops use bad laws to drive the poor away. Downtown, ring out the alarm when the guns with badges turn the sunlight gray. Downtown, raise the price of tyranny for those who run the city. Spark a new resistance to the petty and the shitty. What's there to lose? It's better than hiding out. It's time to wake up and boogie, to stand up and shout that this downtown, it's here for all tonight. Downtown, not just for rich and white. Downtown, dance and recover your dreams. Remember what counts, that the sidewalks belong to everyone who goes. Downtown, the rich and their cops may have their guns in the law books, but we're right to go. Downtown, don't run away from thugs today, whatever badge they're wearing. It's time to care and time to dare and make this life worth bearing. Take back the joy. Yes, maybe we'll face them there. We'll stand up to the bullshit. Let bullies beware when we're downtown. Don't let them steal your rights downtown. Stand up, put up a fight downtown. Let's sing together tonight. Downtown, stand your ground. Downtown, stand your ground.
And I applaud you, Robert. These lyrics are so appropriate and so clever. I made several copies of it, and I'm actually going to distribute it to some of my friends.
Whoa.
I think it should be sung on a regular basis.
Hey, we need some new lyrics. We've been singing this for a whole year. We got to kind of update these lyrics.
Until the situation changes and the lyrics remain appropriate, I think these are the lyrics of the day, Robert.
Well, they are appropriate.
And you know what's appropriate, too, I might want to mention? This is a nice lead-in. I actually went to a meeting the other night. I saw a little notice in the Sentinel that said there was going to be a meeting on Tuesday night at the police station for concerned citizens of Santa Cruz if they wanted to talk about what was going on in their particular neighborhoods to come to a Santa Cruz neighbors meeting. Yeah, took place from 7 to about 9:30 at the Santa Cruz Police Department. I went.
You are no big-time opponent of the Santa Cruz Police Department. You and I, in fact, have tangled on
this is an area where we differ.
I call you sometimes a supporter of the police,
yes.
But you perhaps didn't much go
I really do support the police,
right.
And I feel the police really are here to protect us. And sometimes they do go over the line, and it's really not until it's brought to our attention and we really get to see what's happening and ask more questions instead of just, you know, taking for what we're told is truth. Particularly in your case. But let's not get off the subject right now. We'll save that for a later time.
I just want to point out you're not some sort of knee-jerk person hostile to the police.
No. I like the police,
and
I advocate.
You went out of your way to meet with Police Chief Howard Scarry.
Scarry, yes, I did. And I meet with the DA.
With Belcher, and you, of course, are involved with the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women.
No, not that commission. I was actually involved with the County Commission.
Correct,
for the the County Commission, the County Domestic Violence Commission, which is different from the City Commission for the Prevention of Violence.
But it's a similar subject.
But it's similar, except we were countywide, and the County Commission actually was 15 heads of, like, the Department of Health and, you know, different agencies.
And you were well-regarded and are well-regarded.
Yeah, eight or 9 years.
Your questionable associations with
marijuana.
Me and others and marijuana.
Yeah, and you especially. But no, I was on the Women's Commission for about 9 years, and I was on the County Domestic Violence Commission for about 8 years, and I was in the Lions Club, and I'm a volunteer. I volunteered with CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates. I volunteered with Family Services. And, you know, and as I volunteer here to be on your station, and I volunteer to provide cannabis to people in our county. You know, it's all a matter of choice. But I don't want to get off this subject.
You betook yourself to the police station 2 days ago.
I took myself to the police station Tuesday night after
a community room where they're having a
room.
Meeting.
Yeah. Yep, I was one of the first. I was the second person in the room. The other person in the room, I don't remember her name. She was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman. Appeared very middle class, obviously a homeowner, and she was there to run the meeting. I was surprised at the turnout. They had an excellent turnout. I'd say there were probably about 60 people there, majority of which I'm sure were middle class white homeowners. I only saw two African Americans, no Hispanic people, and two disabled people.
Any homeless or young people?
No. No homeless or young. Only middle-aged couples. Singles, but obviously the majority of people there were homeowners. And there was no specific agenda, but what interested me about the
meeting... Why do you say they were homeowners?
Just from the topics of discussion and the things that they were most interested in, and just, you know, there, here we go with my class issues again, and, the, you know, just the thing when you look at somebody that has beautiful blonde hair and blue eyes and beautiful teeth and their skin is healthy and they're 50 or 60, you know they've lived a life of some sort of comfort and privilege. They've had access to medical care, you know.
Dental care,
yeah, you know, health
as well.
Health care, all kinds of care. But what interested me the most about it is I was a little uncomfortable with some of the things that they were discussing because I come from a working class background. I grew up in a ghetto and in the projects, and I live in low income housing right now. Although I did inherit a little bit of money about 10 years ago, so I know what that felt like for a little while, and it certainly felt good. And people may say that money, you know, doesn't make you happy, but it sure relieves that tension when your car breaks down and you can just go in and get it fixed, or your tooth is bothering you and you can just call the dentist and get in and not wait 3 months to get to a clinic. So money is power. Unfortunately, my money is just about gone, although my power will constantly be nourished by you, Robert, I'm sure. So back to this meeting.
Ours by you.
Maybe. There's a new term they came up with, and you might have heard of it. It's called canivore or canivores, and they are now going after scavengers who take aluminum cans and recycling out of the bins because they're saying, you know, the city needs the money. And we spent a great deal of time talking about it, actually, and they talked about why community members should care about scavenging. And they used a prime technique, which is fear, and, of course, said, you know, if somebody is in your yard or in your apartment complex going through your dumpster, don't you know that they're scanning out your property and probably setting you up for a future break-in of your home?
Or maybe trying to find a place to sleep in a dumpster.
Yeah, there you go. Wouldn't that be frightening? Mm. But they actually called scavenging a gateway crime that leads to other behaviors, such as theft, trespassing, and breaking and entering, which is quite a big assumption. They said that people didn't feel safe with scavengers in their neighborhoods and in their parks and schools. And I want to let your listeners know that the recycling bin that was up at Safeway on Mission Street has now closed. They are no longer accepting recycling because they don't want that element near Garfield Park.
Is that because of action by the downtown neighbors and similar
pressure? It is. They initiated.
They took responsibility for it at that meeting?
Yeah, they take responsibility, and they were very proud.
We got a caller here. I want you to hold that thought, and let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Anita and Robert. Are you a scavenger, a canivore?
Yeah, I was just calling to discuss this item because... I talked to you about it earlier, Robert.
Okay.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Just barely.
You need to turn down your radio, perhaps.
No, I'm standing outside, well, way away from my radio.
Oh, well, yeah. you're just a bad boy.
No, there's a little trouble with
Robert's time because he's such a technocrat.
I'm the best. Keep your ear to the phone and go on, Scott. I know that this is a subject that you're interested in.
Well, I know that, like, back 4 or more years ago when Michael Hernandez was still on the city council, this came before them to make it illegal to mine cans from the recycling bins. And at that time, actually, Michael Hernandez made an impassioned plea that, you know, was just a handful of, you know, unfortunate circumstances that brought these people to doing this, and it was just a handful of people doing it, and that to make it illegal for such a small number of people doing this and that it wasn't really making a big dent in the city's coffers.
Yeah.
And he basically convinced the rest of the council not to vote in this thing, which the staff and the public works was trying to get them to vote in.
Well, that's amazing. Michael Hernandez actually made a positive contribution to the Santa Cruz City Council.
Yeah.
I am impressed.
But somewhere along the line, since that event, I'm not sure exactly when it happened, the city council was, I guess, encouraged to make it illegal, and they did make it illegal.
Yeah, it is illegal right now.
Yeah, and they not only made it illegal for people to go and take cans out of your recycling bins once they hit the sidewalk, but they also made it illegal for the recycling places to buy them from you. If they suspect you did it through the mining.
You know, that's actually this is a point that was brought up at the meeting. They were actually talking about having the recycling centers require your original receipt from your purchase.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, who's going to keep their receipt for a six-pack of soda or something?
I totally agree with you.
I mean, that's absurd.
I totally agree with you.
And the thing is that, see, these redemption centers are there because it's a mandate of state law. If there's not a redemption center, then the store that sells you the stuff has to take the cans back. The stores don't want to do that. So the law, the state law is that, you know, there either has to be redemption centers locally or the stores have to take them. So if the city goes ahead and forces these redemption centers to close,
which they have,
then the stores under state law will have to start taking cans.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to handle that one.
Yeah.
But what troubled me at this meeting is when they brought the issue up, they were saying things like there's a potential for personal and financial information to be obtained and used by these criminals.
Oh yeah, I mean they made it.
But they're instilling fear in decent middle-aged and older folks over the issue of somebody trying to recycle. To me, it just doesn't make any sense, and it's a painful issue for me.
But it makes a lot of sense. They are simply trying to get rid of a whole class of people, homeless people,
from the area.
I mean, yeah. What do you think, Scott?
Well, yeah, that's what I think. Is they don't want these people to enjoy anything. I mean, if they're not happy with, you know, the food at Coral Street, well, that's too bad. You know, they don't want them to go out and be able to exchange, you know, a few dozen cans and be able to buy a cheeseburger at the fast food joint of their choosing. They want them to be stuck at Coral Street or go get a job.
I think the hope is that it'll just be so difficult you're going to leave the area. I think
that's what
it is that they're hoping. They'll just tighten it so much it won't be comfortable for people here anymore.
Right.
Well, what can people do? I know I put through a couple of calls to Fitzmaurice and Porter, who for the second time in 5 years, and actually the second time in a week, returned a call to me. I was really quite shocked, and actually, no, I'm encouraged in my own way. I was called Porter the best of the worst at the city council. Are any city council members, in your opinion, Scott, interested in repeating Michael Hernandez's unlightened approach to...
I don't know. Maybe we could get Michael Hernandez to talk to Tony Madrigal, and Madrigal can make the same plea, you know. I don't know if that'll go over or not.
I expect you to call Hernandez tonight and get that going. I know you've been very good at trying to deal with the Metro strike people. You called Mike Keogh at home. Why not call Michael Hernandez at home?
Well, one thing, I don't have his phone number.
Well, he's probably listed in the phone book.
It could be.
He's supposed to be.
Could be. And if it isn't, I will try to find it for you. I think my producer may have Michael's old number. We used to chat about cards in the old days, Michael Hernandez and I.
But an idea that I was thinking about was that people out there in the general public could get a sticker or something to attach to their blue bin that would say that they were giving permission.
They would be
vandalizing the blue bins.
Well, once the bins were on the sidewalk, technically that's the only time it's against the law.
No. I live in an apartment complex, and we have four big dumpsters, and they are regularly gone through by a couple of different people. It's never been a problem to me, but management doesn't like it, and they are in the process now of making up some signs to put on the dumpsters to remind people that it's illegal and they will prosecute if people are caught. We were also encouraged not to approach people who scavenge because they could be violent and dangerous, but that we should call the police. And I commented, well, what if I look out my window and I see somebody in the dumpster and I call the police? I mean, how long is it going to take for the police to come out on a dumpster call when they don't even come out immediately on a domestic violence call?
Right.
And I was told, well, somebody who scavenges usually goes down the same street, and maybe they'll catch them, you know, at the end of the neighborhood. But still call the police. They want the calls. They must be counting calls they get at the police station for bonuses or something. Because they're encouraging people to call.
I don't want to be so critical of our police.
People could push their blue bins to the edge of their driveway, which hopefully would mean that they would still be picked up.
But I think that it becomes city property.
You wouldn't put it on the sidewalk. You'd put it right on the edge of the sidewalk at the end of your driveway, but not all the way onto the sidewalk. And then you have a sticker on there saying that, you know, you give permission to whoever to take the cans and bottles out of there.
You know what the problem is? I think a lot of people in Santa Cruz might say to your face that they would keep a sticker like that on their dumpster, and they'd be happy to let folks scavenge through their cans if they wanted to, but I doubt how many people would really do that. And I actually think that many people are happy with this law. I notice a lot of two-faced politicking going on, whether it's just in the neighborhood or with the politicians. But I think people, even though they say they don't think it's a good idea, deep down they're liking it. And that's what's troubling to me, is that the people that live on the margins seem to be losing some of their support, particularly in this town. And that's troubling to me. I've been here for 19 years, and I've never seen a change in a city so rapid as Santa Cruz.
Scott, any other comments before I roll the next call, because we're reaching the end of the hour?
All right, well, no, I just thought that, you know, that somehow we got to get this law changed because it's ridiculous.
I don't know.
You're going to call Michael Hernandez.
Yeah, or something.
And
all
people,
right,
okay,
talk to you later.
Thanks. But people can also call the City Council, 420-5020. Yes, if you're sitting at home with a telephone and nothing to do with your fingers, you do 420-5020, and then you leave a message for Mayor Mike Rotkin saying, you know, it's bad enough you think people who sleep in dumpsters are stupid when you're, as a city, you have 40 space for 40 people tonight for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people and a sleeping van for the rest of them. Now you're going to, those people who are trying to help the community by recycling are now being made into carnivore criminals by good groups like the police department's sponsored Downtown Neighbor Association. 420-5020 is the number to call. I have been also regularly covering the Metro strike, and I'm not going to really have much time. I got 7 minutes left in the show. I spoke briefly, did an interview with some of the folks at the picket line today in downtown Santa Cruz, and I've been reading over the midweekly midweekly post. What's it called? Something.
Did
like
you
it?
See the headline in today's Sentinel about the Metro riders? They're hurting. They're talking about the unions only paying them $600 a month.
Right.
And
I saw that headline.
Yeah, I read that story.
I mean, there are some controversies that really need to be really addressed for us to understand this, which has to do with the discretionary funding that is or is not available to pay wages and the amount of mismanagement of capital funding that might also be partially discretionary. I did see a sign on the strike line today that talked about $53,000 a day, which the Metro District is supposedly saving because the grants continue to come in for the first month. This is disputed by Paul Marcel and Sampson and by Les White, who are Sampson's Metro Writers Union guy, who I've had on the air, who has been debated Bonnie Moore, United Transit Workers Union. Les White is, the district manager. He claimed it's only about $3,500 a day that they're taking in. They're taking in money because they're getting a grant, but they don't have to pay the drivers anything. They don't have to pay the bus expenses. But it's also true they don't get the fares, so there's a reduction. Drivers on the line say fares are not that significant a portion of the amount of money that's coming in. I don't have the figures here. I can't really tell. And
all I know is the Board of Supervisors. Somebody has to step in and end this strike.
Well, if you go to the UTU Local 23 site, you say, and they also apparently there's, the union was willing to meet again today and tomorrow and the next day to talk about the strike, but the management said they weren't going to meet until Saturday. So they've delayed that for at least 2 days. There's, for those who are interested, go to the local UTU, it's actually called local23.org if you want to get the union's position on this, though I still find it unfortunate, and Paul Marcel and Sampson pointed this out, with that the Metro contract, if you click on Metro contract in the, on that site, you'll find it's now concealed. It was concealed after he exposed some what he called troubling aspects of that contract a couple years ago at a Metro board hearing. The next day, according to his account, the union concealed the contract, so you have to have a password to get into the goddamn website there, which I think is a bunch of bullshit, and you know, I don't know how accurate his account is, but they should obviously let the public read the fucking contract. Thank you very much. Bonnie, get off your butt and do something about this, is my suggestion. Authorization required indeed. But I'm still a supporter of the union and the strikers, and I encourage people to call in to Vice Mayor and Vice Chair Mike Rotkin, who claims to be a big supporter of, you know, a big union guy on campus. With he also claims to have six instances of where the management came up with a, its management negotiators came up with a proposal which was accepted in negotiations by both sides and then took it to the broader management and was turned down, indicating, Rotkin said, that the current Metro board's veto of its own negotiating team's proposal was not that unusual. He said that it happened before. I asked him to document this. He gave me one instance, which I haven't been able to check on, and refused to talk about the other instances because he felt I wasn't really worth talking to at this point on the sidewalk, and that you'd rather, you know, schmooze with the other folks. But I'm not, frankly, though Rotkin is sometimes accurate, and he has a history of being involved in different struggles, and he shouldn't be necessarily dismissed out of hand. He is also notoriously bad on some issues. That is to say, he lies about some issues. Or if you want to say he lies, you would say at least his statements are so far from reality and so repeatedly the same misrepresentation.
How about misleads?
Well, it's not that he misleads. I think he makes statements that are not true about the homeless situation. That he makes a statement that Santa Cruz is the, you know, is there's no city in the United States where homeless people can sleep on the sidewalk. It's not true. There are cities where there have been settlements made people where homeless people can do that under court order, or because there have been, you know, decisions, settlements made. It's not that it's a best thing to do, and it's not that it's a permanent situation. It's just he doesn't acknowledge that things have been done.
Well, where are they to sleep? I mean, where are people going to sleep?
They can move to Fresno. I believe that's the standard answer. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You have a very short amount of time. Whoops. I guess you called off. Quickly, if you want to call in, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes. A couple of quick things. I'll just let people know. No word yet from the medical marijuana person who we talked to on Sunday, LC or LV, I think his
LV.
Name, LV, his name was, I don't know if it's LV, LV's a...
No, LV's a small woman.
Yeah, she's the woman, one of the few women actually uses
government
marijuana. She's one of the eight people.
Which is not very
nationally.
Good.
Right.
Very poor grade
but,
medicine.
But, no, this is, I think it's LC. He was a guy who had a felony charge for having a pound of marijuana. Park Ranger Allen caught him and...
Alonzo Eversole.
Alonzo Eversole. We haven't heard from him as to what's happening. The update on my case, I went to court yesterday on the charge of disrupting a council meeting and resisting arrest. My jury trial has been postponed for a month and a half until December 12th. And so I'm currently at large and at liberty and stalking the streets at least for that period of time. So take that. There are other things that have been happening. I contacted Fitzmaurice because we have a bill. You may recall it was mentioned by Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn coming up at the next city council meeting, which supposedly is going to establish an Office of Compassionate Use, which sounds good, so the city can supply medical marijuana. The trouble is the last sentence of this bill says, this ordinance shall take effect 30 days after the date of its adoption, but the city, in essence, the OCU, the Office of compassionate use, shall not cultivate, obtain, possess, or distribute any marijuana pursuant to this ordinance until such time as a court of competent jurisdiction has issued an order finding such activity to be permissible under...
In other words, they cannot open.
Under federal law.
Yeah, it'll never work.
So this is bullshit. This is. I called Fitzmaurice and I said, what are you doing proposing something like this and adding a provision about federal law? And I think activist Tim Rinker, who talked on the air last time, is right. This is simply a way of covering the city's ass on the medical marijuana giveaway. I'm not quite sure how it does
that. Well,
the
City Hall, now let's get this straight. The City Hall did not give anything away. What they did was they allowed Valerie Corral and Wham to distribute their weekly distribution, as they do every Tuesday. The only thing that was different was
we're
the location.
Okay, we're out of time. Thanks for that. And so if you want more information, you can contact Fitzmaurice, 420-5020. It's the same number for Fitzmaurice and Rotkin. You can then you go into a... It's a 24-hour number, so check it out. I also... left a message for Ed Porter, again requesting information on the taser orders for the police. I was told by the library that those orders, thanks to Copwatch activist Tom Belote, are to some extent online available, but the police department and the city have not seen fit to put a hard copy of that in the library, so people can't really get access to them except that part of the orders that Belote has put on the online as an activist. So, you know, you want information, you got to go to the activists. I want to thank you for being on this edition of Bathrobes, PR's Broadsides, Anita. I want you to come back. You're great. You're hired as co-host along with Thomas Levitt, who got the Free Radio Santa Cruz okay to be occasional co-host or a co-host if I get jailed or dragged away or, you know, have to go to Tahiti.
I'm not going to let that happen, Robert.
All right. Now we're talking. I'll be back on Saturday. On Sunday. Oops, Sunday will be 9:30 in the morning. If you want to join me, it'll be a long show, but I got lots to get through, so please jump on board. You got stuff you want to talk about in between times, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to reach me on. Show is archived at huffsantacruz.org. And I hope that those archives will be updated shortly. I want to thank you. Support the strikers. Support folks on the street, at least the rights of folks on the street. Doesn't mean you have to give away everything you own to anybody. It's up to you.
At least be friendly and compassionate.
Well, be as you feel, but don't... You know, Jason Pascal, by the way, the fortune teller, a tarot reader, was arrested day before yesterday on a charge of reading tarot without a license and disturbing the peace. He's back. He's refusing to give up, and I'll be playing his interviews on Sunday. Keep an eye out for folks out there. If you see police fucking with people, whether it's a bicyclist going the wrong way on Pacific Avenue or somebody sitting near a building or anything of that sort, draw the public's attention to what's going on and raise your voice on the issues. Speak your mind on the issue. Say this is not the right thing to be happening. This continues because we are silent. That's why it can go on.
Because we're afraid, Robert. They make us very afraid. I see it every day.
That's true.
It's in the language they use. It's in the ordinances they adopt. It keeps us in our place. But I agree with you. People need to act.
It's true. I'm going to go off with an interview by Tim Ahern. As soon as Uncle Dennis comes in, we'll be going into From the Cream to the Dregs. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, PR's Broadsides.
Well, it's Sunday evening, about 15 to 9, or 9, and we're walking in East Santa Cruz talking with that homeless vagabond on a bike.
Tim Ahern.
Tim, you're not only a homeless vagabond, you're also a union rep.
Well, I'm a home care chapter elected president.
And you have, shall we say, had differences of opinion with city council member and, SEIU... labor, what's his position?
He is Cliff Tillman's lackey and lapdog. He's basically there to show up at meetings and eat food.
Well, not a difficult job, but I know I saw him at the so-called presentation of this sleeping van that they had this summer, which you were slated to appear at, but for some reason did not make it to. Any comments for your fans?
Oh, in that particular case, I had exploded. The resistance from Tony and the various powers that be of the union had driven me to an extreme state of trying to stay away in order for my own good. That was a most unfortunate meeting to miss, since I had spearheaded that through the chapter to sponsor it for the union. It only took 4 months for them to hear it.
Uh-huh. And where is that sitting now? That's in the sleeping van resolution.
As far as the union's concerned, they're not interested in helping the homeless.
Although they claimed that they were willing to have a debate on helping the homeless, but just not helping them overturn the sleeping ban.
Well, we're going to find specifically with the SEIU, unless it benefits them monetarily or politically, they're not going to be interested in advancing it at all.
So, well, you're... I know you, I guess Bernard Klitzner of the Human Rights Organization, who was trying to get this issue appealed, he was told he needed a homeless person to overturn their, to officially appeal it as a member of the union.
Really? That would be me.
Well, another gadfly role for you. So
I better call Bernard then and set that up.
Bernard, unfortunately, is in the Philippines and will be until January. Engaging in extensive drug smuggling, I understand.
Disguised as hell. summer day. Carry me along to return where I begin. Long summer dreams sliding around my mind. Those long summer dreams are leaving me behind. Hot summer day, carry me along to its end, where I begin. Circling like a river